Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, the Ma Barker House. The Ma Barker House is a product of the criminal dark times of the Depression and Prohibition. Its storied history links it back to the Barker criminal family of the time. Criminal activity, including bank robberies, kidnapping, and other traumatic events, were inflicted on those who crossed the Barker family's path along their way. Eventually, the FBI would catch up to the gang, ending in carnage. It would be known as the largest FBI shootout in history, holding that title to this day. What exactly happened after the dramatic shootout? What's the full story of the Ma Barker House, and do the Barkers still reside there today?
To go into the story of the Ma Barker House, you really have to go back into the late 1920s, the early 1930s, and really get a feel for the social climate of the time. So what we had going on at that time was we had the Great Depression as well as Prohibition. And what that did, that led to an outbreak of criminal activity, both organized crime with regard to the Prohibition, but also gangs that would rove across the country, mainly hitting banks and other locations where large amounts of money were stored. So the prolific buildup of gangs during that time was extremely prevalent. So one of the larger gangs that emerged from that time was the Barker Karpus gang. Now, the members of that gang were varied, but the main members were the Barker family, and that included Ma Barker. Her name was Kate. Her original name was Arizona Kate Donnie Clark. She married George Barker and became Ma Barker to her boys. She had four sons. There were Freddie Barker, Doc Barker, Herman Barker, and Lloyd Barker. And they joined with a gentleman, a gang member, actually, I'm not going to call him a gentleman, another gang member named Alvin Karpus. And together, those boys, along with Ma and Alvin Karpus, really crisscrossed the country and wreaked havoc on banks and other large holdings where money were stored. What really got them into some hot water, however, was after the bank robberies and such didn't really yield what they were wanting in regards with returns, they started kidnapping. So the first person that they kidnapped was William Ham Jr., who was a brewer. And they got $100,000 from him. They returned him unharmed, but they did get $100,000 ransom. And after that, they decided to kidnap a gentleman by the name of Edward Bremer. Now, again, going back a little bit further during this time, there was very little state jurisdiction. So these gangs could crisscross jurisdictional lines and really didn't feel a whole lot of pressure from law enforcement because of that lack of jurisdiction. But around this time also, during the Edward Bremer kidnapping by the Barker Karpus gang, you have J. Edgar Hoover, who has come on the scene and who has started to standardize training and federal law enforcement. So he has the FBI going now, and he's got these standards and trainings, and he's got a group of FBI agents known as the Flying Squad. So they are actually going out and attempting to really rein in these larger gangs. So when the Barker Karpus gang, again led by Ma, kidnapped Edward Bremer, J. Edgar Hoover, this was a kidnapping that was near and dear to the president at the time. So he directed J. Edgar Hoover to go after the Barker Karpus gang. Feeling the heat from the FBI at that point, the Barker Karpus gang pretty much split up. They went in different directions to try to get the FBI heat off of them. So Doc Barker went to Chicago. And Ma and Fred Barker, at that point, went to a small town in Central Florida known as Ocklawaha. And they rented a house from a gentleman named Carson Bradford. Carson Bradford had this rental house on a lake called Lake Weir. So they decided to rent that house in the fall of 1934. So again, the FBI are after the gang at this point, and they end up tracking Doc Barker to an apartment in Chicago. And when they found him, they found some papers, and in among those papers was a letter written by Ma, and it referenced a lake with an alligator named Big Joe. And so the lake was located in Central Florida. So the FBI went down to Central Florida, and they started talking to local alligator hunters and said, what lake in Central Florida has an alligator named Big Joe? And there's actually two of them. One was near the Gainesville area, and that didn't pan out because that alligator had actually been shot by hunters. The only other lake was a lake known as Lake Weir. And so the FBI agents decided to stake out that lake, and they noticed that there was a guy who was fishing, didn't look like your normal, you know, outdoor huntsman fisher type. So they kind of approached him and were making small talk with him, and come to find out that was Freddie Barker. So after they established that Ma and Fred were in the house, on the early morning of January 16th, 1935, a group of FBI agents, a dozen of them, surrounded this rental house, and they asked they yelled for the Barkers to come out, and the response they got was gunfire. And what ensued after that point was the largest FBI shootout in history, and it still maintains that that designation today. Over 2,000 bullets were fired during the hours of the shootout, and it culminated in Ma and Fred Barker actually being killed by the FBI. So that is really what put the Ma Barker house on the map in this little town, this nondescript town in Ocklawaha, Florida.
Did anyone in the town, I mean, what was the atmosphere in the town? Were they aware that these crime family members had taken up residence or taken up, safety in this house prior to the shootout?
Actually, they did not know that they were crime members. Okay. So Ma and Fred had rented the house under the name of T.C. Blackburn. And all indications were that they went out into the town. They were spending money. They were introducing themselves to the Blackburns. They would, somewhat socialize with some of the townspeople, not get too chummy, if you will. But no, they were out and about, and they just figured that they were so far removed from the FBI, from Washington and Chicago, and those larger Midwest towns where you would assume that they would hide out, that they really didn't, they didn't really try to lay low, if you would. So they did, all indications were they did spend money there. The townspeople knew them as the Blackburns. And during the shootout, actually, people came out and stood by the side of the road and watched the shootout as it unfolded.
Is there any record to indicate that the family there was maybe done with their criminal past and maybe trying to blend in and start a normal life or a life not crime ridden with the new names and going out into the community without kind of in the incognito mode, but not completely, staying to themselves? Were they attempting to move on from that world, or was this just kind of a stop along the way for them, do you think?
That is a great question, and to answer it, no, they were not giving up the life of crime because this was all they knew. Mm-hmm. The boys started their criminal activity at a very young age, and Ma encouraged that criminal activity because she was reaping the benefits from it. So to go back to your question, they were actually using this house as a stopping point when the rest of the gang, they knew that Ma and Freddie were there. And so Alvin Karpis, who again was the major player in the gang, he was actually taking the ransom money that they had received from the Edward Bremer kidnapping, and he was using that as a stopping point, the house as a stopping point, to take that money down to Cuba and exchange it for quote-unquote clean money. So he would stop by the house, and even though they were only there for a couple of months, he would actually stop by the house on occasion and visit Ma and Fred and kind of used that as a stopping point on his way down into Cuba. Okay. So when they went into, after the shootout, when the FBI went into the house, Ma and Fred both had bug out bags, what we would call bug out bags today. Mm-hmm. They were packed and they had money. They actually had a large cache of weapons that they used to fire on the FBI. Again, this shootout lasted for several hours, over 6 hours.
Yeah.
So there were numerous guns. There was a lot of ammunition. So they were ready for the FBI, but they were caught unaware that morning. They didn't think it was going to be that quick that they were going to get caught, because they rented the house, like I said, in November of 1934, and the shootout happened January 16th, 1935.
Okay. So you have a house that is the site of the largest FBI shootout in history at that time, mm-hmm. and still holding the record to this day. I imagine a lot of bullet holes in a lot of things. And mm-hmm. obviously just a property that is somewhat stigmatized with this happening on it. This happens way back then. What happens to the house right after the shootout with the rest of the townspeople? Obviously, it's still standing to this day, but take us back to right after the shootout. What do they do with the house?
So, to digress just a little bit, as I said before, the house was a vacation home, and it was built by a gentleman by the name of Carson Bradford.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, he did not want to rent the house out. It was for his family. He was from Tennessee originally, and he made his fortune in the amusement park industry. So he had built this as a vacation home, and other rentals in the area were going for about $7 to $15 a month. The Blackburns, a.k.a. Ma and Fred, actually said that they would rent the house for $100 a month. So he couldn't miss that opportunity. So he jumped on that opportunity, and they paid him in advance for 2 months. So obviously not knowing that he was renting it to one of the greatest crime families of the time. After the shootout, he had the foresight. He and his family had the foresight to really save a lot of the pieces of furniture and the artwork and stuff that were involved in the shootout. So if you go into the house today, you will still see bullet holes. The original furniture, a lot of it is still there. You can line up a chair, for example, that has bullet holes in the back to the bullet holes in the wall and see where the bullet has come through. Immediately after the shootout, people were enamored by the house. They wanted to go into the house. The FBI quarantined it off for a couple of weeks because Ma and Fred, their bodies actually laid in state in a funeral home in Ocala, Florida, for about 8 months because nobody would come and claim the bodies. So there was a fascination as the bodies lay in state there. There was a fascination with the bodies, with the house. But eventually, Carson Bradford, he still used it as a vacation home. Nobody ever really lived in it full time for a lot of years. The family did maintain it. And interestingly enough, in 2016, they decided they wanted to sell the property, and the new owners did not want the house. So Marion County actually said, we will take the house and we will move the house to a new location. So what they did in 2016, they actually put it on a barge and they floated it across Lake Weir to another location in a county park, and that's where it sits today.
Wow. So for all those years, it's a vacation house, literally from the 1920s on. Nobody's ever actually calling it home. And what a vacation house to go back to, I guess, when you're trying to get
yeah.
away with riddled with bullet holes. So mm-hmm. in the time period of it being a vacation house, obviously the interest of it, peaking way back with people enamored with this shootout and the crime family and the bodies and all that. Eventually that does simmer down, and it just gets kind of, assuming, becomes a legend of this is the house where that happened. And it sits, mm-hmm. and people
Absolutely.
Come and stay and go and all that. All the way back into those time periods, you're talking a massive window of time here, the 20s all the way up to, mm-hmm. to nearly present day. Was there any record? Was there any early stories or legends or anything that went on surrounding the house that pertain to it having paranormal activity of some sort? And if so, how far back does that go?
Absolutely. And I'll just say that, you know, there was a fascination. And initially, after, you know, a few years had passed, the city there actually started holding reenactments at the house. So they would hold reenactments on January 16th. And, you know, they'd bring the guys dressed as the FBI agents with Tommy guns, you know, mock Tommy guns. And they would stage these reenactments.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks and then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.